Boston.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tonight, Mr. Mo Rocca of Comedy Central's The Daily Show.
We're going to have an honest, open debate between the President of the United States and the one man we believe has the insight and the cojones to stand up to him. So first, joining us tonight, George W. Bush, 43rd President of the United States. Welcome, Mr. President.
Good evening. I'm pleased to take your questions tonight.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I'm pleased to ask them. Taking the other side, joining us from the year 2000, Texas governor and presidential candidate George W. Bush.
Good evening.
Thank you, Governor. Mr. President, you won the
tonight's topic. Should the U.S. sponsor peace talks in the Middle East?
Yes.
No.
Yes!
Stephen, with great power comes great responsibility. As the warm, moist womb of liberty, the United States cannot shirk its duty to bring these two sides to the table or some other suitable piece of furniture.
Steve, that's a stupid thing to say, and you're a stupid person for saying it.
As a fake anchor man of a fake news show, I feel like I have a pretend obligation to inaccurately report the news, to ensure, for example, that our phony reports from Baghdad are genuinely phony. Well, Blair started at the time...
John, in the fog of war, details get overlooked. Facts become irrelevant, truth becomes fiction, knowledge becomes ignorance, night becomes day, chaos reigns. Tear up your history books and live in a cave. This is mankind, day one. Back to you.
The age of irony may have been briefly buried in the ashes of 9/11, but satire quickly got its groove back in the late night zone. In the age of freedom fries, Comedy Central's news send-up The Daily Show with Jon Stewart turns news of the day into comic relief by turning on the parody High Beams. Somehow, its mock pompous reporters and rampant funditry come a lot closer to the truth than the straight news shows it skewers. And the straight news world is eating it up. Our guest tonight, faux reporter, pop parodist, and fundit pundit Mo Rocca, now makes regular appearances on CNN, Fox News, NBC, and Gasp, NPR. So what's going on? Has news become stranger, less real than truth, less honest than parody? Could it be that satire is now the only safe place for candor? And as The Daily Show solemnly asks, who's your Baghdaddy? Is it Mo Rocca? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's listen to a bit of Mo Rocca on the job.
In times of war, the American home front has always been a crucial source of strength. During World War II, with the nation's industrial manpower shipped off to the front, America turned to woman power. The image of Rosie the Riveter embodied the effort made by America's working women while introducing a new kind of femininity, the kind we would later call lesbianism.
Joining me now from New York City is Mo Rocca, senior correspondent for The Daily Show, commentator for CNN, The Today Show, and VH1, and panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Good evening and welcome, Mo Rocca.
I'm still smarting a little bit. Did you call me mock pompous? I am through and through just a bloviating windbag full of pretentiousness.
Wait, don't hang up. We'll call you bloviating and pretentious if you prefer. Mo Rocca, we've got your image in mind, that flyaway hair and your goofy little suit and your horn-rimmed glasses and your take on the news. What are you doing when the camera goes on there?
I thought you were going to ask, what am I doing when the camera goes off? Because then the bow tie comes off and it is a party. Perhaps you've just explained all that my life means and I've been unable to distill it. Honestly, maybe it is true that satire and we hope satire at its best is one of the only channels available right now, one of the only avenues for talking about the news, at least for those who are between the ages of, 18 and 22 and watch our show.
And is that why you are now sucked on to the mainstream news channels? Are they asking you to
bloviate and hand down mo opinion or something else? Are they trying to mix it up with the juice of your satire?
Well, I'm mopining all over the place, as you pointed out. The only place I have yet to mopine is BET. But, you know, if I search my family history enough, maybe I can find an excuse.
Maybe, baby.
Or at least make one up. And of course, this is not the world of print. So there's yet to be a mop-ed page. But I'll get off that racket right now because sure.
Good.
Your listeners
stay right
tired
there.
Of it. What was the question?
Well, what is it that makes you catnip for the non-satire news world? When you're on CNN, you're on Fox, you're on the Today Show. Even NPR gets a little fun piece of Mo Rocca these days.
Yeah, I'll dish out a little fungerchy to you guys, and I did that earlier today. In fact, I think part of it, the more menacing sort of theory, I guess, is it's all part of the larger infotainment kind of merging together of entertainment and news and what anything that can be called media. I think also it may be, you know, I've seen these statistics that assert that people, younger Americans, are consuming news, newspapers and television news in fewer numbers than ever before. I, by the way, I don't know if I believe that. I don't think it's really measurable because I speak at a lot of colleges and not for credit, which is really shocking because, you know, you think if I'm whoring myself on everything from C-SPAN to Telemundo,
you should get a doctorate out of it someday.
Hopefully, yeah. I like honorary things. I think perhaps people see this as a way to, you know, hold on to that coveted young demographic. I also think that I'm pretty stylish. I don't know. I mean, the suits.
No doubt about it.
Some people might think they're a little bit goofy, but they cost a bundle. Let me tell you, I get all my suits at Paul Stewart.
It's working. It's working. And I'm not sure that Annika Sorenstam could fit into one of your suits. She's pretty buff.
Annika Sorenstam. I was rooting for her all today. I was thinking about, you know, Vijay Singh, the champion golfer who objected to her going to playing at the Colonial,
and she didn't make the cut. Do you think he's happy tonight? Happy man.
I think he is, which really gets me steamed. But I was talking to somebody earlier today that you know, if you really listen to Vijay, his objections to her were reasoned. Actually, they weren't sort of antiquated sexist reasons. I mean, the three reasons I heard him cite were: number one, she was going to spend too much time gossiping with her caddy, holding up the tournament. Yeah. You know, being catty about everybody else. As bogeys and slices. And number two, they were concerned that she'd had to bring along, you know, three or four golfers with her every time she went to the bathroom, and that would hold things up. And finally, his third, I thought, was really, really, really cut. Was much more academic and much more compelling. And it was, quote unquote, just 'cause. Just 'cause. That's why he was against her playing.
It just felt that way. I mean, I know, you know, we hear your funditry and we hear your probing commentary.
And that's PH, by the way, funditry, because you always got to keep them, you know, guessing, misled, off balance.
Keep them guessing. A little something special, a little wizardry there. I know Lingerie Barbie has been on your screen lately, and I'm not sure why.
Well, let me tell you something. If let me know if we're going to roll something here, because I'll certainly set it up, and I'll go ahead now anyway. I had the great honor, and it is an honor, to be invited into the no spin zone, onto the O'Reilly Factor on Fox News. Now, I should say that O'Reilly was out that day, so it was with Cal Thomas, who was his stand-in, and so, which was probably for the best, because I don't know that I could have. I think I needed to be in an outer valence shell. I think if I had actually been at the core of the no-spin zone,
might have been just too much.
Well, the torque, is it torque? Something would, I would have fallen apart. Something would have happened.
Mo Rocca, let's hear a little bit of you in that outer valence shell, the no-spin zone.
Barbie has been a feminist icon for almost 40 years. She's performed all different sorts of jobs, from flight attendant to beautician to fashion model. But we live in a post-feminist era now where women don't have to hide their sexuality. They need to embrace it because therein lies their power. And the fact is, little boys play with dump trucks. Little girls play with lingerie.
Yeah, but dump trucks don't have garter belts. I mean, come on, let's be honest about this.
But it's very important. I mean, my question to Wendy and the Concerned Women of America is, would you rather that your daughter pretend to be a hooker or a crack whore, or would you rather that she actually be one? At least lingerie bar. There are many countries on this planet, Indonesia, Zambia, Canada, where girls marry and have children as early as 12 or 13. And in that way, I think that lingerie Barbie could, in fact, be a marital aid. It's a way to help improve their sex lives. So it's serving the politicization of Barbie in this way means that if you have this Barbie who just keeps blithely spitting out little rugrats like this, then you're going to have Planned Parenthood Barbie, and then you're going to have like a Right to Life Barbie,
don't
and then a Right
ideas.
To Life Barbie that then kills abortionist Barbie. It's a slippery slope. It's a really bad situation.
Okay. Frank Rich in the New York Times says you guys at the Daily Show have perfect pitch, that you're telling the truth when nobody else is. But lingerie Barbie, come on. What are we
I have to ask. Well, we had to hold off on Frank Rich because I need for our listeners to understand a little bit more about the context of that. That was me in a debate. We didn't hear my opponent, but that was me in a typical cable news debate with a leader of a conservative women's group arguing the merits of lingerie Barbie. She was against it, but that last clip, which alluded to abortionist Barbie, was about the pregnant Barbie, which is actually her cousin Midge. I'm sorry?
Pregnant Midge, yeah.
Pregnant Midge, right, which is her legal name. I think it's hyphenated. My opponent in that case was against lingerie Barbie because she thought it was very dangerous for our youth. But she was for pregnant Midge because she felt that these pregnant Midge came with a wedding ring. And listen, I want to be very clear about this. I think anyone who gives their kid lingerie Barbie is pretty weird, but I don't think, as my opponent asserted in the argument that took place, that a person that gives their child lingerie Barbie is by definition a pedophile. That was her argument.
That's
and
good.
You know, I played that sequence, the entire sequence, for campuses because they I found that college kids are really sick and tired for what passes for intelligent debate on television, because I was lucky. I got to debate somebody who didn't realize I was joking, and I adopted what I thought was as entrenched and rigid and inflexible a position as she did, and it spun out of control, and that's what happens on television all the time. And I think, without sounding preachy, but why not?
So cast your funditry eye then over on straight TV, on I don't know, on everything that you guys mock. Why doesn't it work? Why don't we get the real deal? Why does it leave so much bull standing?
Well, in this particular case, honestly, I think that again, all these shows that are really about theater, about spectacle, about shouting at each other, people aren't buying them as real intelligent discussion. These are shows that are designed for a small number of people, first of all, because they get very poor ratings, but for people who want to hear what they believe repeated back to themselves in an echo chamber. And I think younger people maybe see that and say, you know what? You know, Paul Begala or Tucker Carlson, both of whom I know and like very much, aren't necessarily in this forum speaking for me, and I'm not buying it. And so they need to hear somebody at The Daily Show, including me, I think, make fun of that and to take the piss out of it, if you will.
So when you sit down at The Daily Show crew to decide on your nightly agenda, are you looking just for yucks, or are you looking to get a point across?
Well, it should be said, because anything that would be overtly preachy would be the opposite of funny. So we are certainly looking for laughs in the end, but we want to have a point of view. And I think we're trying to do several different things. At its easiest, the easiest thing for us to do is make fun of the way mainstream news treats the issues of the day. It's very easy to do that. And I want to say, first of all, without sounding too much like a politician, that it would be too lazy for me to say, oh, we mock the media, because what does that mean? And you know what? Lots of reporters obviously do a great job. I mean, it was difficult closely following 9/11 for a variety of reasons. First of all, it was an unspeakable, you know, horrible thing that had happened. But also, it seemed like most reporters actually did a really good job.
Are you covering your fanny here now, or what? Why are you ladling this out?
Well, you know, I because I really do believe that particular case, that the reporters showed restraint. You know, if you looked at coverage from other countries, they showed people falling out the window and throwing themselves out of the window of the World Trade Center. I don't know what value that really had.
So you're willing to hand out some bouquets, but gosh, the very form of The Daily Show really goes at all the weaknesses. I want to come back after a short break and talk about those. We are joined tonight by news parodist Mo Rocca. senior correspondent, and fund it for Comedy Central's hit news parody, The Daily Show. You can join the conversation. Listeners, the lines are open now for your questions for Fund It, Mo Rocca. Has news become stranger than truth? Could it be that parody is now the only safe place for candor? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook with Mo Rocca on Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with news parodist Mo Rocca, senior correspondent and fundit for Comedy Central's hit news parody, The Daily Show. You can join the conversation. What is it that satire touches that mainstream news does not? Why do we so love a good send-up of the news? And who cuts closer to the bone of truth these days, The Daily Show gang and Mo Rocca, or Dan Rather and John Stossel, just to name two? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's hit a little more of Mo Rocca on the job.
Mo, thanks for joining us. Crazy volatility on the market today. I was watching the ticker stocks were down 200, and then they were up 30, and then they were way down again. What's going on?
Well, John, the stock market may seem chaotic to ignorant outsiders, especially on a roller coaster day like today. But it helps to remember that stock prices are based on a company's worth, plain and simple. Take a well-known company, General SUVs. Electric. They're big, they're bold, and they consume ungodly amounts of fuel. In short, they embody America. But these days, there are some... This was not, as some people seem to believe, another Bush gaffe or malapropism. What the president said is actually an old Texas saying...
I actually always thought the expression was, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might be the way they say it in New York, John, but there are regional differences here, colloquialisms. For example, you might say soda, somewhere else they say pop. Here it's pancakes, elsewhere flapjacks. Your state might not execute retarded prisoners. Another state might enjoy that.
Mo Rocca on The Daily Show. What do you think? Is lingerie Barbie a sign of the end of days? Or is Mo Rocca that sign? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Tony's calling from Oconawoc, Wisconsin. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
It's Oconawoc. As in comedy, always been like this. So I mean, they can tackle hard issues without. I mean, in the end, it's only a joke. So I mean, you can pretty much say anything you want.
So is this the same old to you then, Tony? Is that your point?
Yeah. Well, it's still pretty much. I mean. Right now, there's such a fear, and that's pretty much what's been motivating. I mean, you can't say anything that's anti-political or in the mainstream media and such. Okay, I'm retarded.
Tony, come on, Mo. As I cut off the caller, what he says is absolutely right. I don't think what we're doing is terribly different than what comedy shows that are about politics have done in the past. What is different is that. Everybody else is so timid. So it's in much higher contrast, I suppose, with the rest of the media.
So Mo Rocca, does that mean that The Daily Show offers escape? Or if this whole laudatory line on how you guys come near the truth is correct, are you taking people closer to the heart of what matters?
I think maybe for a core group within our audience, we are cutting closer to the bone. I don't want to get carried away with the praise we've received and sort of in areas of the press that everybody seems to treat with reverence. That is the New York Times. I love the New York Times, and I'm glad they like our show. But it would be dangerous to believe for us, most of all, it would be dangerous to believe that we're really changing the way vast numbers of people think. I think people appreciate that first and foremost, we mock the style of the coverage. And there are occasionally times when we'll mine comedy out of a story that other people haven't touched. And the most interesting case for us was the Halliburton connection to the reconstruction efforts or what might be end up being a real concrete Halliburton connection. I know they're being looked at as potential, you know.
As a rebuilder, and they have subsidiaries already in the pie.
Exactly. And you know, it's interesting how we came upon that story. It's very difficult, obviously. We don't want to make jokes out of people dying. And when the war began, you know, we didn't have anywhere to turn. And so I distinctly remember John Stewart saying, well, let's look at the money angle. Maybe there's something there because that doesn't involve people dying, you know, directly. And so the Halliburton story had not been broken on television, and it was a very marginalized story even in print. So we really grasped onto that, to be honest with you, because we had nowhere else to go.
Just to kind it's interesting when you say you have nowhere else to go. I mean, two kind of famous stories in the Daily Show history now. One is, after 9/11, you spent a week right off the air. You tell us, couldn't find a way to bring into that milieu right away, and came back with a very kind of impassioned, almost tearful John Stewart soliloquy there, and did come back. The second, that in the first days, weeks, of the war in Iraq, you steered away from the war itself and talked about entertainment, TV, and all the rest. Does that mean that there's still turf that you can't get onto with your approach, with your format?
There is. And you know, the sort of print analog to The Daily Show is often that people often say it's The Onion. A lot of our fans love reading The Onion.
Great website.
The Onion can get – it's wonderful. It can get away with more, in a sense, with edgier, if you will, material, because when you see jokes coming out of people's mouths, like jokes about 9/11, it makes everyone very uncomfortable. But The Onion was able, more than any other comedy vehicle, to satirize – you know, related events to 9/11 sooner than anyone else, because, you know, print you can get away with more, I think. But I should say that the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq were really, really different for us. And for one reason, among others, but the main reason was that there was really unanimity on the war in Afghanistan. I mean, the vast majority of people agreed that it was the right thing to do. But there was real contentiousness on Iraq, and so we weren't reduced to making fun of the coverage of the war in Iraq. We actually got to make fun of the decisions being made by the administration, and we got to make fun of protesters, because when there's conflict, I think comedy feasts on that, because there are different sides to take and there's different angles. But we weren't going to stand outside of the unanimity surrounding the effort in Afghanistan. That's not our place.
When you look at the mainstream media, do you consciously think to yourself, joke among yourselves, gosh, they're chicken. They're just not saying what's really on their minds.
Yes, although I should say I may part from my colleagues on this, and I am not filled with a sense of outrage, I have to tell you. When I watch some cable news channels, I watch Fox News, I end up laughing. I don't seethe about it. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe that's not a good thing. Maybe I'm just extraordinarily cynical. But my feeling is that there are so many news sources out there that when people complain, a lot of the time they're just being lazy. Because you know what? If you think that cable news is junk, well, okay. In most cases,
flip,
you're
flip,
right.
Flip.
Well, then pick up a magazine.
But you're suggesting at the same time there, Moraka, that there is a seethe factor at The Daily Show, that you do have colleagues there who seethe. I mean, it comes through in the humor and the tenor.
Yes, and I think it's good to have a balance between sort of, I wouldn't say lighter or frivolous, but maybe a good, healthy silliness mixed with you know, the seething, but because both elements are there.
And there's the Mo opinion, the fund at work. Linda's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Sorry to cut you off,
Linda.
Hi. My question to you is, do you think we'd be looking at the media this way without The Daily Show?
Yes. Our audience is expanding, and that's wonderful, but we're not about to take over the world. Most people are smart, and if they are angry at the media, they were angry without us. I don't know. I think maybe we're helping to crystallize what they're angry about. I know that I look to what people laugh at in our show as an indication of what is angering people about the media. We're sort of the reverse image of the media. What they find laughable, you know. Anyway, so.
Linda, is that true for you?
I feel like I was thinking that way by myself. Mm-hmm. And then when I see The Daily Show, I feel like, thank goodness this is made public, that my humor, because I feel I'm looking at it, I'm kind of skeptical of what I'm reading and what I'm hearing.
Yep.
And then, thank goodness, this is now being broadcast on a TV station where there's a ton of people hearing what I think. And not all the time, but a lot of the time, I just feel like, thank goodness, you know, someone's making this public.
So are you tuning in to The Daily Show for a hit of humor or for a hit of skeptical community?
Skeptical humor?
Skeptical community, like you know.
I think it's more like, I feel like the grain of truth that you feel in humor, mm-hmm. you know, when things are funny but they're kind of true, mm-hmm. I feel like when you bring that to light, it's with the onion that you've referenced, I yep. feel like that's mm-hmm. more like just humor because they're making up stories. I feel like The Daily Show is taking stories and maybe making them funny to show you the truth in it that you might not be seeing with conventional news. Not that it's news necessarily, The Daily Show, but I feel like it's helpful that way to see things in a funny way, to see more of the truth.
Linda, thanks for your call. Mo Rocca,
thank you,
there it comes again, that the bouquet has come at you guys. Are you that good, or is there such a deficit?
One.
Yeah, catch one, please. Are you that good, or is there a deficit out there that leaves you the highest point standing?
I think we have good feelers, and so we know what people, again, find ludicrous about the day's events. We know what our audience finds ludicrous about, you know, the events of the day and the coverage of them, and we're striking a chord. And so I think you're right. I mean, the community of laughter might, you know, sound a little bit overblown, but I think that there's something to be said for that. People come to the show live, certainly with a little bit of a sense of righteous indignation about what they feel the media is doing to them and trying to feed them. And so the laughter is tinged with a little bit of an edge. Linda should also know that if she's single, it's a great way to meet people showing up at our studio.
Great. And when you all look out at the TV news anchors or the news establishment in general, do your antenna perceive fear? Do you perceive intimidation, an intimidated media?
Intimidated by us?
No, not by you. Intimidated by Ari Fleischer. You tell me. But there's this notion abroad, you know, that people are not fully speaking their minds. They're not telling the whole story. There's whether it's patriotism or a demand to line up behind this war or that.
Look. They're surrounded by landmines, and when I think about it, when I oftentimes don't, but the fear that they have. That the right has given them, that the right has laid before them of appearing unpatriotic, is on a continuum with the fear that the left has, you know, allegedly laid of being, you know, insensitive to minorities or women. Mm-hmm. They have to be so careful because they'll be flooded with complaints and threatened sponsorship withdrawals if you know they offend in any direction. So I think they're in a really tough spot. And I, by the way, do think that that's part of what may appeal to our audience is they see us maybe as a little less fearful of willing to tell it like it is.
And carving out maybe a place in the middle. John Stewart says, I'm reading a quote here, liberals and conservatives are two gangs who have intimidated rational, normal-thinking beings into not having a voice on television or in the culture. That's saying a lot. Michael's calling from Boston. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
I've been watching the show for a long time, and I watch and listen to a lot of news all day long,
okay.
But it's really at 11 o'clock at night that I sort of get to let go of it all, because I feel a lot of the same ridiculousness about the reporting that I'm seeing, so it's a real release. But I also wanted to say it's interesting that I'm an artist, and there's a history of institutional critique and the support of that as a way of sort of getting guilt off of your chest.
So that you think it's cathartic not only for I wonder maybe I'm mishearing you but it's cathartic not only for the audience but by the way it is a little bit cathartic for the actual members of the media that watch our show. I know a lot of reporters
no doubt.
Watch it and they feel basically a little bit dirty about some of what they do, and so they watch our show and they laugh harder than anyone else.
Right, and the laudatory comments that you get from the New York Times are a way of sort of that the sort of institutional cathartic response.
What's the inhale
that's
of breath?
A great
there?
Point. I'm sorry.
What's the inhale of breath mean there? Yours?
That's that is a great point. It's an inhale of ecstatic agreement. I think also I should say without biting the hand that feeds us or that lauds us or does or strokes us, I guess, is that I think a lot of the praise we get sometimes is from people who say. Who are praising us as a way of saying, "Oh yeah, we're on your side of things. We agree that everybody else is ridiculous. We're on your team. We're not part of everything you're targeting." I'm not saying that's maybe conscious, overt, but I think it's both. I think it's a way of confessing their sins and cleansing themselves and also hopefully ending up on out of range of our barbs.
Your artillery, Michael. Thanks for calling, Muraka. We could use a little funditry this day and every day. I don't know. Ari Fleischer is resigning. Have you paid attention to that? Did you pay attention to him? Or you tell us.
Sure. I mean, I think he has a lot of places to go. Didn't they just purge half the cast of The Practice on ABC? Maybe he could end up there. I know he's free to date Helen Thomas now. I don't think you're allowed to if you're a member of the What's that?
Yes, we heard tell.
Yeah.
So off he goes, Ari Fleischer. Would you be yourself a potential candidate as a replacement for Mr. Fleischer?
Oh gosh, I'm not careful enough, and I'm bad at not disclosing information. I'm a blabbermouth. I'd be the worst press secretary.
And the president himself, could you imagine yourself sitting at his elbow, preparing him to meet the American media?
As long as he puts on funny costumes like he did a couple of weeks ago. I love when he plays dress up because I think I minored in psychology. I'm really into this whole Piaget sort of cognitive development stuff. And I want to say, a lot has been made of his wearing the flight suit on the deck of the aircraft carrier. I think that we should encourage this because every parent knows how important it is to encourage in your children that kind of play, that kind of dress up, because it helps to cultivate and nurture imagination, and our leaders need imagination. So I hope that when George W. Bush visits Amtrak, say, that he dresses up like a conductor, and maybe when he visits NASA, he can dress up as Buzz Lightyear. I think this whole idea of play is good. So to answer your question, if I worked with him, I would encourage that, I would nurture it.
More costumes, more play, and we can well imagine that possibly happening. Mo, you were at Harvard in the Hasty Pudding Club, the gang that dresses up like girls and lauds celebrities.
Sure, so I know about that, right?
Yeah, you would know a little bit yourself. You spent time writing for children's
heels
shows.
Heels are hard, man.
Yeah, heels. I know heels on big feet like yours.
Yeah,
and then writing for children's.
All the guys at NPR wear heels, right? That's what Republicans
Mo,
will
we,
tell
we,
you.
We told you before the show that was the one thing that was off limits, and now they're going. But wishbone.
Are those espadrilles? I thought those went out.
I'm not sure. Wishbone? That was one of your stops on the way to The Daily Show?
I've always thought it's important for kids to watch a dog who dresses up as the heroes of classic literature in order to familiarize those kids with the themes of classic literature so that when they encounter them later on, they won't find them so daunting. It's very practical.
A kind of a canine, man's best friend, put children at ease with the great thinkers of our time.
As a babysitting Cliff's Note deliverer, yeah.
We can see it. We can absolutely see it. We're going to have to take a short break. We're talking tonight.
I want more calls.
Calls. Calls are stacked up, Mo. They're coming to you. We're talking with news parodist Mo Rocca, senior correspondent and fundit for the Comedy Central's hit news parody, The Daily Show. Listeners, the lines are open now for your questions for Fundit Mo Rocca. Has news become stranger than truth? Could it be that parody is now the only safe place for candor? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK with Mo Rocca. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with news parodist Mo Rocca, senior correspondent and fundit for Comedy Central's hit news daily parody, The Daily Show. You can join the conversation. Why do we so love a good send-up of the news? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Mo Rocca, a couple of questions. First, The Daily Show is now carried on CNN International. What's that about? What are they to make of this in Kuala Lumpur?
I think we wanted to try to get the rest of the world to hate us even more, because I think, honestly, that there's a whole people that study trends can tell you this. There'll be a point at which we're so hated that we'll suddenly become really hip to like us. And I think that's what we're trying to do by airing it all over the world.
And what about your dates with Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR show? That show goes out on the road, so you see public radio listeners face to face. What have you learned, O Funded?
Well, I've learned that 40-something women that listen to NPR, when they come face-to-face with Carl Castle, who is the co-host of our show, they become like their younger Beatles-screaming selves, and they fling their tote bags aside, you know, the ones with the stray banana at the bottom, like, you know, that's mingled in with a crumpled-up copy of Nation, and they become crazy. And I've also learned that most of them don't have TVs. They'll come up to me and say things like, "Oh, I've heard that I'd love your show if I had a TV."
Point of pride. Point of pride.
Yeah, it's very what's the word? Amish? No.
Yes, public radio listeners are so Amish. Ron's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Portsmouth. Hi, Tom. Ron. Before you say anything, I want to go to Portsmouth. I'm a huge historic site. History buff, and I love Teddy Roosevelt, and I know that the treaty, the Russo-Japanese War Treaty, for which he won the Nobel Prize, is commemorated at a hotel in Portsmouth.
I think that might be Wentworth by the Sea.
We'll try and work that out. We don't want a parody of history here. Ron, well, you've got Mo Rock up.
Anyway, Tom and Mo, I'm glad I got through to you guys. You were pretty funny about saying that you want everyone in the world to hate us about the show being on CNN International. However, The Daily was actually a really great program to get caught up on the new issues that are being put out there. And I think you guys do a great job in doing that. Even though it's funny, you actually bring people up to speed on some of the things that are happening in the world. And I also wanted to say, Mo, I think you're great. And I also love Lewis Black on your show.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. No, in all seriousness, yes, I think that what the show may do, and I do think it's watched by large numbers internationally now. I think that it maybe is reassuring to some people that say, okay, well, it's good to know that that not all Americans are actually marching in lockstep with everything that currently this administration is doing or is in and doesn't buy in completely to the American media's treatment of things.
That could be a comfort.
Yes, I think so. I do think so.
Yeah, and it is for Ron. Barry's calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Barry. You're on the air.
Mo, I just had a question for you. Is John Stewart busy getting replacements as you guys get famous and start doing commercials and sitcoms and leave the show?
Uh-oh, onward and upward with the arts. How about it, Mo Rocca?
He wants is Barry, do you want to send me your reel? Is that what this is about?
I
want 16 bars of an up-tempo and a ballad from you. You know, the nice thing about the job, this is sort of about the mechanics of it, is that because they want a loose ensemble, they let us do a lot of other things. They don't try to keep us tied down, and we take advantage of that. And I do because, you know, I've gone from being a gadfly to a darling, and that's all I ever wanted. I think that they're always keeping the feelers out there. And the criteria have changed for what they're looking for in correspondence.
What The Daily Show is looking for. What's the criteria now? What's the net?
Oh, I don't know. Jeez, you know, I wish you hadn't asked me. I just wanted to
let that
say
one slink
the criteria
off.
Are, and yeah. Let everyone knew that I knew it was plural. to be able to act mock pompously. Okay, I'll agree with you now. It certainly helps if you are, you know, we all have different backgrounds. Among all the people that have been correspondents, not surprisingly, there are a large number of improv comedians. There are some stand-ups. I was neither. I was, you know, as you pointed out, a children's television writer and producer. But I think that I'm the most addicted news junkie among all of us. So I think I make up for it there.
And there you are, Ron. Thanks for your call. Phil's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
I was just wondering, sometimes I can see you guys really working hard to create something very funny out of just a workaday news stories. And other times you guys get thrown some real softballs, like all the people dressing up as chickens to protest the recent legislative departure in Texas or the entire 2000 election. How do you think about the different types of shows, those that really are sort of handed to you in a silver plate versus those that maybe you have to dig a little deeper for the humor?
Well, that's a great question. I think that first of all, one of the challenges is learning to not work over something that's comedy gold if left rough and left alone. I mean, sometimes if something comes along that's really easy, sometimes it's just best to just let it be easy and just deliver it. There are other things, though, that are dangerous to get addicted to, like Geraldo jokes. You have to be really specific. And I think it's just too easy to be like Jay Leno and just sort of make fun of Geraldo for, you know, being ridiculous and but not really analyzing it. And I think we've done a good job of dissecting the special kind of craziness that is Geraldo, that weird mix of sort of perverted patriotism and that strange all-black wardrobe with the kind of the Tex-Mex neckerchief in the desert, and you know, rather than just saying that he's dumb, which he's not, what was I going to say? And George Bush is also a good example of this, too. You know, people, when he was elected, a lot of people who didn't like George Bush said, oh, this is going to be so easy for you because he's dumb and, you know, he's constantly fumbling with the English language. And that's really – I think it's bad for comedians to become – to settle into any kind of rut. And that in particular would have gotten really tired.
Don't take the easy shot. Phil, thanks for your call. Mo Rocco, we're almost out of time. When you're home tonight smoking your pipe and thinking about, you know, future –
It's a hookah.
What deep thoughts are you likely to be engaged in this very evening?
I'm going to wonder what Clay and Ruben are doing tonight, how each of them is handling – the result of the American Idol final vote tally.
No doubt.
And thinking about the next big story, which is going to be probably the controversy surrounding that vote. We have another Florida on our hands, folks.
It could be big. It could be very big. Well, Rocco, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been great having you.
Sorry that I went out on such an uninspiring – you wanted me to say, I'm going to think about how I can take this administration down with my comic wit, with my rapier wit. We're going to change the world.
No, Ruben will do. Ruben will be just fine. Mo Rocco, thank you so much. It's been great having you, and keep it coming. Mo Rocco is senior correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and a panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. This is On Point. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
The Republican tax plan is nothing more than voodoo economics. Only in Washington would Republicans tell average American families that raising their national debt is a way to solve this economy's malaise.
This change is based upon the recent terrorist bombings in Saudi Arabia and Morocco, also in conjunction with intelligence reports concerning anti-U.S. terrorist group intentions.
I'm really pleased about this. I think the passage of the United Nations resolution allows the international community to come back together again. It gives added hope to people in Iraq. It allows us to put behind us some of the divisions of the past and get on with the business of reconstructing Iraq for the Iraqi people.
Prime Minister Sharon accepted the roadmap, and that's progress. He accepted it because I assured him that the United States is committed to Israel's security, and that since we're committed to Israel's security, as we move forward, we will address any concerns that might arise regarding Israel's security.
We don't yet have a complete picture of the overall damage, but we do know that between 4,000 and 5,000 people are injured.
I'm not leaving because of clashes with the administration. In fact, I haven't had any. I report to the president. He has always asked me to give him my best unadulterated advice. I've always done that, and we have been on the same page.
I love my job. I believe deeply in President Bush, the man, and his policies. But it is my time to go. It's with a lot of happiness, but a lot that I know I'm going to miss that leads me to say it's time to say goodbye.
Stockholm, Sweden, please welcome Annika Sorenstam.
lot of good stuff today. I mean, I'm very, very pleased. There were some holes where I played a little conservative, but I hit exactly where I wanted. And, you know, I really didn't miss many shots at all. So, you know, add them all together, I'm very pleased.
And there's a week, despite opposition from congressmen like Robert Menendez of New Jersey, both houses of Congress passed a $350 billion tax cut package. Undersecretary of Homeland Security Asa Hutchinson announces the nation's terror alert has once again been raised to orange. Tony Blair on the UN Security Council voting 14-0 to lift sanctions against Iraq and give the UN a stronger role in post-war Iraq than originally expected. President Bush on Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon saying Israel is prepared to accept the roadmap for Mideast peace. An earthquake in Algeria kills over 1,600. Two high-profile resignations from the Bush administration, Press Secretary Ari Fleischer and EPA head Christine Todd Whitman announced they will step down. And Annika Sorenstam becomes the first woman in 58 years to compete against the men in the professional golf tournament, though she did not make the cut today. Jack Beatty, not a perfect day for Annika Sorenstam, but not a bad week for President Bush.
No, not a bad week at all. I mean, he's the president using the political capital he's gained from being the victor over Saddam Hussein. He first used it with his tax cut. But, you know, you said it was a $350 billion tax cut. Of course, it's more like an $800 billion tax cut.
When you take out all the gimmicks of sunsets and sunrises and the rest.
Right. And isn't it striking that the Wall Street Journal uses the word accounting trick, I think was the phrase. The Washington Post said ruses. And gimmicks is the other word you hear. In other words, these ruses and gimmicks and tricks are on us.
Well, and these are not words buried in the paper. These are on the front page.
Are on the front page of our papers. Now, those Republican senators who voted for this, papers are saying you voted. Why did you put in these ruses and tricks and so on the public? Well, because we didn't want the public to know the truth, which is that this is a perhaps even a $1 trillion tax cut, which means debt and deficit ad infinitum.
But Jack, I mean, there's a lot of fuzzy territory here. It's not exactly a secret when it's on the front page of all these newspapers, and the public is watching, and the public is reading, and President Bush's poll numbers are high.
Well, actually, they're not. I mean, he's right now at 62. 3 weeks ago, he was 79. He's only going to go in one direction from now on, unless he has another war. So he's coming back to normal. Polls show the public had no interest in these tax cuts, that they basically, you know, saw that most of them, the advantage were going to go to people who get dividends, very small amount of Americans. To be sure, the child tax credit, the exemption for children doubling, that's very important, and there are going to be income tax cuts. But in the main, most of us are going to get a few hundred dollars, and Dick Cheney voted. He cast the deciding vote on a measure that was going to give him $170,000. Great country, isn't it?
He's the vice president. I guess it's his job to cast a vote it's a tie.
It was a tough choice, you know. He had to say to himself, now, admittedly, this is going to get me 170, but I'm going to do the right thing.
Jack, President Bush appears to be preparing to step up to the Middle East situation, maybe even visit the Middle East.
Yeah, here is a president using political capital, and this is going to be something to see, because, of course, this is going to involve a painful confrontation at some point with Mr. Sharon, who has very powerful supporters in the Congress and in among other Americans, and it's going to be a tough thing for a president. The usual line on the Middle East is you can't put pressure on Israel in your first term because it'll cost you in the election. You have to wait to the second term. Bush is doing this now in his first term. Clinton saved it for the second term. So we'll see how that works for him.
And a real quick one on the North Korea front, perhaps another positive development for the president this week. Japan has stood up with tough language shoulder to shoulder with the United States. Didn't have to do it, but it has.
Yes, and so has South Korea. Now, maybe this will create a new realism in the North. Let's hope.
We'll hope. Jack, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Tamar Morad, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Chris O'Connor and Sabi Mir. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is